You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Stewart McLean found himself on a train platform in India with no ticket, no passport, and no idea of who he was or what he was doing there. He couldn't remember his address, his family, or what had brought him to India. Then he was taken to a mental hospital where he had to be restrained because he was so agitated and tormented by hallucinations. His symptoms were that of a psychotic break. But the real reason for his confusion turned out to be quite different. He has written a book called The Answer to the Riddle Is Me, A Story of Amnesia, which describes this terrifying episode in his life and his long recovery. David Stewart McLean was a guest on our show in January. We're re-airing that interview for you today. I began by asking him, you didn't literally wake up, did you?
I did. I came to. I came to suddenly, standing up.
So you weren't sleep. You hadn't been sleeping.
I hadn't been sleeping. Like, all of a sudden, snap, I was awake. And then I would go, I would black out again and again and again.
And what was the last thing you remembered?
I don't, there's like weird blurry memories that I have of before that time. One was of monkeys, the sound of monkeys. And I remember telling the police officer who found me, it was like, I think I slept somewhere with monkeys. And he just sort of laughed at me.
Well, you knew what a train station and a policeman was.
Yes.
Do you know what had happened to your passport? Because you didn't have much ID on you.
Yeah, what turned out was that I had left my flat that I was staying at with the door open, the lights on, the computer on, and the music blaring at 4 o'clock the day prior. And we know, I know this because the watchman of my building saw me leave. And he came and got somebody else and they locked up my place. And then they just put out the alert that I was gone.
How did you learn your name?
I learned my name because it turned out I had my wallet. And so I had my New Mexico driver's license.
Well, when you heard your name, was it familiar to you? Did you say, oh, yes, that's me?
I think I was so happy to have a name that I was just sort of like overjoyed. I was like, yes, something.
Did anything come back to you with hearing your name?
No. The first thing that happened was Rajesh, the police officer who found me, assumed I was a drug addict and told me I was a drug addict. And so my brain made up a story of being a drug addict and hanging out with a woman named Christina, who's totally a fiction in my mind.
Now, are we talking about something like LSD or heroin?
Yeah, I thought I was in India just in an apartment doing heroin all day.
Well, there are Westerners who do just that.
Right.
So it made sense. How old were you at the time?
I was 28.
So it was possible. Were you afraid of the cop?
I went back and forth. Sometimes I was like, he was my savior and I loved him. And then sometimes I was terrified of him, that he had actually drugged me and was taking advantage of me.
He brought you to an internet cafe. Why?
Because in my wallet there was an internet cafe card. And so he thought we could find out something there.
And did you?
Well, we got into my email. And the best way to explain the way this happened is it was almost like my brain was spasming. And there would be times where I could remember things and times that I couldn't, times that I could remember things. And so it was like Christmas lights. They were just flickering on and off, and some were just dead bulbs.
And then you were brought to Mrs. Lee.
Yeah.
Why had she made the work she was doing her life's work?
Her son had traveled to Singapore and had come home to her 3 months later in a box, cremated ashes that she kept in her living room. And she told me that this is what happens to people like me. I just end up breaking my mother's heart and that I'm a terrible person.
Because her son had been had been abusing drugs.
Yes.
Do you remember how you got your family's phone number?
No, I have no idea. At first, I thought it was, you know, just the sort of musical. Like, I remember listening to a tape of music And I remember it was on the plane ride back, and I could remember these Loretta Lynn lyrics for Rated X. And I could remember it like the half second before. So I thought for a while that that's the way I remembered my phone number. Like it was a musical thing in my head. But I lived with that for a long time. But my dad was like, it took them like 8 hours to get the phone number out of me, according to what he had heard.
And that night at Mrs. Lee's, you started to have hallucinations. Do you remember what they're like? Because I suspect even now that some of the short-term memories are lost.
Yeah, the hallucinations were really awful. At first, it was just I was an old man who was in his bedroom, and he was supposed to. It was like my birthday, and I was supposed to walk out and grab crackers and then say something, and then all of my family would run and hold me and love me, but I couldn't remember what I was supposed to say, and so that was just sort of anxiety. It was just sort of like I have a lot of anxiety. I don't know what to do. And then two men who somehow knew my mother came in who were evangelical Christian, and they started praying over me. And that's like the devil got into my hallucinations, and that's when things went really bad.
And you were taken to a hospital. Were you given drugs there to bring it down?
Yeah, I was taken to a hospital. A regular hospital where I punched a nurse, and then they gave me a bunch of Valium.
And they strapped you down.
And they strapped me down because I punched a nurse. And then they transferred me to Woodland Psychiatric Facility where I stayed for 3 days hallucinating.
But I'm assuming they still were treating you as though you were on a heroin-induced psychotic break.
Yeah, it was acute pleomorphic disorder. Which is funny because it's specific, many-formed. I was specifically crazy.
During this time, you had a feeling that you'd done terrible things in your life, things for which you deserved to be punished. Where do you think those feelings came from, other than the fact that you had done some terrible things in your life?
Yeah. I think in some ways, like, I had the emotional detritus, sort of all of my own personal carcinogens floating around. And when the narrative of my life had been disrupted, I just had that emotional detritus to sort of go off of.
And there's a lot of detritus here. You felt that God, in the shape of Jim Henson, had asked you an important question and that your inability to answer it was the cause of your suffering.
Yes.
Ever wonder why Jim Henson, of all people?
Well,
were you feeling like you were a Muppet?
I feel like if there's anybody who's going to be God, it's going to be Jim Henson. It's either that or Chuck D. One of those two people are going to be God in my personal cosmos.
Can you remember what the question was?
The question was I had to repeat to him a quatrain that he had told me before I was born. So that was a stumper. And so, like, I ended up cursing a lot, swearing at the top of my lungs in this mental facility. The nurses thought I was the most entertaining psychotic they ever had. But it was specifically about masala dosa, the long, thin pancakes of South India. And I started screaming F masala dosa over and over and over again. And the nurses, when I was then calm, kept coming up to me and saying, would you like some masala dosa, David?
Because they wanted to.
Yeah, they thought that was hilarious.
Did you have moments of lucidity?
Every once in a while I would snap too, and then I'd just go back to swimming in infinity.
My guest is the David Stewart McLean. His book, The Answer to the Riddle, A Memoir of Amnesia. Why did you go into India in the first place?
I was in India to do a study on what I was working on at the time. I was a fiction writer, and I was interested in spoken grammar. And so I was there on a Fulbright doing low directional interviews to analyze grammatical structures.
And later you realized that your Fulbright might be in danger because of this.
Yeah, and coming out of the hallucinations, I was convinced that people were looking for a reason to pull it away from me. So I went back to India immediately. I spent like 4 weeks in Ohio, and then went back to India because I was terrified not being well.
Now, how long had you been there before the incident?
Just about a month.
And you'd been taking a drug called Larium?
Yeah. And that turned out to be, it's a drug that has these side effects more often than you think.
It's also been given to the Peace Corps and to the military. So I'm assuming you're not the only person who has had a problem with it.
No, absolutely not. The generic name is Mefloquine. It's no longer sold under Larium in the States. But it was developed between La Roche and the Walter Reed Institute for Research. And it never got the double-blind study. Instead, it was given an observational study on Peace Corps volunteers.
Well, just last July, the Food and Drug Administration announced Larium must now, or its new version, must now carry the so-called black box warning on its label because of the danger that it could cause serious neurological and psychiatric side effects, some of which could become permanent. And that's been an issue as well, hasn't it?
Yeah. So that, they said the physical side effects, and the physical side effects can be vertigo, constant vertigo, because it affects the vestibular system. And then there are the psychological effects, which are paranoia, aggression, panic attacks, depression, suicide.
How commonly was Larium prescribed as a malarial preventative?
Oh, it was the number one.
When did someone first come up with the idea that the drug might be the source of your problems?
For me personally, my GP back in my hometown said immediately. As soon as they found me, he was like, whatever you do, get him off that drug.
Because at least, but nobody in India had been aware of it, despite the fact that I assume people were taking it there as well.
Yeah. No one had any idea. They just really thought I was a foreigner, whacked out.
Well, it's part of the problem that the prescribing doctor is usually far away from the patient when he starts to manifest symptoms.
Yeah, and also like when people are – so it's hard to make that causal connection between drug and symptom. Go ahead.
Your parents were sent for to bring you home. Did you recognize them when they arrived?
As soon as they walked in, there was some like shock of electricity in my head that by seeing them see me, I could figure out – more of who I was knew that they owned me in some respect.
Did you remember the project you'd come to India to work on?
No.
Did you even know that you were a writer?
No, I didn't at the time.
But this book is intense and has a lot of very immediate writing. Did you start taking notes and keeping a diary, despite the fact that you didn't know you were a writer?
Well, that time is so clear in my head. Waking up is so very clear in my head because it's almost like a daguerreotype, the old photography where they would soak a copper plate in chemicals and then expose it to the light. And whatever was it exposed, it got singed into the copper plate. I was a copper plate, and my brain was coated in chemicals. And as soon as I woke up, like, everything is there. I can remember waking up on that train platform better than what I had for dinner last night, just because it's so tangible and present. And it's also, as anyone who's gone through trauma knows, that in some ways trauma is the memory that is really your own.
People with PTSD talk about that as well.
Yeah, where that is in some ways this weird handrail in your life where you get to hold this because it's the only thing that's really entirely yours.
And people with PTSD often self-medicate, start drinking. You did that as well. And you started smoking.
Yeah.
Had you been a smoker before?
Never smoked. I was asthmatic. I went to asthma camp when I was a kid.
So why smoking? Did the nicotine in some way help you with the anxiety?
I started smoking originally because a guy kept visiting me, a guy I didn't know. Kept visiting me and bringing me cigarettes, so I just started smoking. But then I realized smoking is great for people who have anxiety because you can leave the room and go do something by yourself.
Well, your mother must have been horrified because you had asthma.
Yeah, she was not happy about that choice.
They brought photographs. Did the images bring anything back?
No, the images just made me feel terrible. because there were all of these people I couldn't remember, and it was heartbreaking.
And when you met the people, friends and family, did you remember them the way you'd remembered your parents?
Some came back immediately. Some I was just like, I can sense there's a relationship here. I'll just go with it.
Had the hallucinations stopped?
The hallucinations sort of dieseled out over the next month and a half. Just sort of like I would wake up screaming. I would wake up feeling like I had dissolved into the universe again.
So the drug, even though you had stopped taking it a long time before, it had changed your brain or your nervous system to a point where you were still being affected by it?
Yeah, it pools in the brain. And there are two theories on this. One is that it interrupts these protein gap junctions, and it just sort of like a thumb over a hose and just sprays data. And so stuff isn't getting where it's supposed to be. And then you pass the drug. It's the almost like food poisoning theory. And then the other theory is it's just a neurotoxin. It just kills everything.
What about the dog? Did you remember the dog?
No, but she remembered me. She's still out there. She's 14.
David Stewart McLean's book is The Answer to the Riddle, a memoir of amnesia. You sent out an email to a group of friends and colleagues informing them of your situation, and the responses were rather surprising.
Yeah, it turns out...
Not as sympathetic as you would have expected.
It turns out that the person I woke up to find out I was kind of a prankster who would say something like this. One of my professors told me he was very sorry to hear this. Also, he had fallen down a flight of stairs and hit his head and gained superpowers. And he has been flying around his living room all day.
But in a way, this must have also have prevented you from learning more about who you'd been, because they were all treating you, this whole thing, as a joke.
Right. And so it sort of, in the way I was relearning myself, where I was just sort of letting the other person lead, and then I would do whatever they thought I would do. It took me a long time to take this seriously, because I told it as a joke for a while, if I ever told it at all.
You were at a party where a woman told you that you treated women terribly. What did she say to you?
She said, like, at a party 2 years ago that I didn't remember, I had been dancing with a woman and dropped her. Like, we had been dancing, and I dipped her and I dropped her. And instead of helping her up, I kept dancing. And she said, I knew at that moment that you were a misogynist. And so I had to go to my mother, and I said, Mother, am I a misogynist? And she was like, no, you don't like men either.
You never talked to your girlfriend about that conversation, or even asked her about your relationship with her. Were you afraid of what you might have found out?
I was terrified of the debts this person owed. I was terrified of finding out all the debts that this person owed.
Now, you're paying a terrible price for trying to avoid having malaria. How dangerous is malaria? Reading this book, certainly the solution sounds a lot worse than the problem.
It is in some ways. Like, my sister had malaria, and boy, did she not have the issues that I had.
This is a family problem?
Yeah, probably.
Had she gone to India?
No, she was in Kenya. And come back with malaria. But with cerebral malaria, you can be dead in 2 days. And so in some ways, yeah, you really should risk it if larium is your only choice. But nobody knew. We weren't being told all of the risks with larium.
And you say in the book that it's hard to overstate the effect malaria has had on human civilization.
Yeah. 500,000 years, it's in our genetic record. When you understand how big malaria is in the human equation, you can understand why it took so long for people to give up on larium, because larium was like the moon landing. Larium was, we had found a way to defeat malaria.
When the doctor prescribed it, did he say there are side effects?
I can't remember. No. Sorry.
What happened when you met Annie, your ex-girlfriend?
She was the only person of my friends who came to Ohio when I was recovering. And she was wonderful. But I also...
Despite the fact that you've been a jerk.
Yeah, she's a wonderful person. Um, I just couldn't, in rebuilding myself, I couldn't sort of place her in the cosmos that I needed to.
Now, you learned to fake recognition.
Yeah.
Because it was just too embarrassing to look at somebody you'd known for most of your life and not know who that person was?
Yeah, it's a really huge insult to someone to forget them. And especially when that's like Aunt Jan. Like, Aunt Jan, you forget you have an Aunt Jan. And that, like, you can't overstate, like, how painful and horrible that is to Aunt Jan.
And then you decide to go back to India. You said largely because you were afraid of losing your Fulbright. But you were returning without much memory of even where your apartment was.
If I had stayed in Ohio, I'm convinced I would have committed suicide, because I would have been surrounded with stuff that I would have been expected to know. And every day I would run into something I was expected to know. In India, no one expected me to know anything. And so, like, I was able to recover at my own pace.
Have you recovered? Do you still feel you're missing vital information?
You know, 12 years gone, I don't know how much you remember of October 2002. but, like, 12 years gone, like, it's, in some ways, like, those memories are gone, but they might have been gone anyway. But I still have panic attacks. I still have anxiety that was never there before.
And I get the feeling that you feel you're a different person than the person you heard you were before all of this happened.
Yeah, my mom sort of summed it up best. She was like, you're much less glib. You're much less just punchline all the time.
One of the riveting chapters in the book tells about the use of valerium in Guantanamo, given to prisoners. Is malaria an issue in Cuba?
This is a terrifying thing that came about in a discovery. A Seton Hall professor found that prisoners who were coming to Guantanamo Bay were given six times the regular dose just immediately before they were even, their tests for malaria even came back. And there's no malaria in Cuba. And so the idea is this was pharmaceutical waterboarding, that this was using the drug for its side effects rather than fighting malaria.
Have we heard any more about that, the impact it's had on the prisoners?
No. I mean, the reason the discovery was going on was to investigate the spike in suicides that had happened in Guantanamo Bay, and that's where this information came from.
Did you ever publish the novel that you were working on in India?
No, it's absurd.
Are you fundamentally a different person than you were before? And you look at that novel and say, I don't know where this came from?
Yeah, it's all very scatological and very, it tries to be clever. Like, its prize in the world is being clever. And that has ceased being a big part of my life, is the desire to be clever.
Have you been able to pick up your relationships with any of your old friends?
You know, we still talk. I'm still friends with a lot of my old friends, and they're wonderful people.
Well, do you think that this book closes a chapter for you?
That's a really good question. In some ways, like, it opens a chapter that I had really, really, really wanted to keep closed, and that I had pressure sealed with anecdotes and, like, sealed away from myself.
Because you had to research your previous life,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I had to go back and do this and to write the book seriously and to write the book honestly. I had to relive all of that. And I had to slip around all of my defenses. And I think anecdote is one of the great defenses that we have from keeping trauma at bay.
Are you still intent on writing fiction?
I love writing fiction. I love reading fiction. It's my favorite. I mean, but I also love writing nonfiction.
David Stewart McLean is a Pen American Award-winning writer, and his work has appeared in the New York Times, Plowshares, This American Life. He has written a memoir called The Answer to the Riddle Is Me, a memoir of amnesia. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.